All right, here I am, Joe Haggerty, all by myself. Murph's going to jump in a sec. But you know what I want to do right now? I want to start the Great American Hockey Show. Let's get it going. We've got a great show today. Kirk Ledecky from the New England Hockey Journal. We've got Murph and I talking Zdeno Chara, Boston Bruins, and a lot of other things. But right now, let's get that awesome Great American Hockey Show podcast music. Welcome back to the Great American Hockey Show podcast. I have my co-pilot, my co-host, my partner in crime, James Murphy, here with me. Murph, how's it going?
It's going great, man. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you, too. It's good to be back in the saddle. I know we had a little bit of a hiatus there before with the last show, but now that we're back, a lot of stuff going on. The Bruins are in a playoff spot. They went out west and played against Peter Chiarelli's team and Dougie Hamilton's team for the first time. They've won some games, they've lost some games. They finally beat Montreal for the first time in a couple of years. But I think what we're going to focus on today is Zdeno Chara and what we've seen out of him lately, where we think he's going, how much the Bruins can get out of him. And I'll tell you right now, I see a guy right now that's playing close to 25 minutes a night. It's almost 2 minutes more than he was playing last year. He was down in the low 23s last year. It was the lowest ice time total he'd had in his time as a Boston Bruin. It seemed like they were going in the right direction with him as far as managing him. And now you see a guy that has to play more because of their defenseman situation, and I think his performance is starting to struggle a little bit. He made a play against Montreal to help them win that game, obviously, but he also looked bad against Calgary, especially in the 3-on-3 overtime. He's struggled in other games. The game against Nashville, he was arguing with the ref about an offsides or a call, yep. Not paying attention on the penalty kill, and basically let Roman Josi go right by him and score a goal. We're just seeing sort of diminishing returns, I think, as they continue to ask more out of him. What do you think of Chara with the Bruins right now?
Well, you know what? Hags, I'm gonna reference a great Quentin Tarantino movie, and I believe he has it coming out, another movie coming out at Christmas, so why not? And I'm going to go back to Pulp Fiction. And you look at Marcellus Wallace talking to Butch there, and he says, "What's wrong, Butch?" And Butch doesn't want to go in that fight, and he says, "You know what that is right there? That's pride. Bleep pride." And that's what I think is going on with Zdeno Chara right now.
Did you look that quote up on your computer?
Oh, I did. But it came to my head.
Nice.
All right?
Yeah.
So if I'm Don Sweeney right now, or I'm Cam Neely, or I'm Claude Julien, I'm playing the role of Marcellus Wallace, and I'm telling him, look, Z, you're not the guy you used to be. The game isn't what it used to be. But you have the hockey sense to survive and to adapt, and we need you to do it. Because we need you to still play these minutes you're playing, because we don't have other guys to do it. So we need you to apply that hockey sense, and you referenced that game with Nashville or the game with Calgary where there was clearly no hockey sense going on there. There was too much pride going on. And I think right now he needs to stop being stubborn. I think he needs to realize that he is still a great hockey mind, but maybe not a great hockey player right now in terms of keeping up with the speed of the game. It's time to adapt. It's time to accept your fate. And it's time to stop putting your stop putting yourself before the team.
See, I think he's adapted to a large degree, and you couldn't be 6'9" in this league anymore as a defenseman unless you've adapted. I just don't think his body can handle playing 25 minutes a night, no matter what he does, no matter how much he conserves energy, no matter what style he plays. When he's playing that many minutes against other teams' best players and asking what they ask out of him, and you know, penalty kill, power play, the whole deal, mm-hmm. the whole shebang, he's not going to be able to be consistent, and he's going to continue to get worse and worse, I think, as the workload takes a toll on him. And, you know, he shouldn't be on the ice in the 3-on-3 overtime. That game, that play against Calgary, from what I saw, Claude Julien goes with Zdeno Chara, throws him over the boards. No, not necessarily.
Okay.
I think the captain wants to be out there in 3-on-3 OT, and that's what we're talking about a little
yeah.
bit. But Chara goes out there for the 3-on-3 OT, and then all of a sudden, as soon as Bob Hartley sees Chara out there, he pulls Johnny Gaudreau and out there for the first time on 3-on-3 OT. He was just waiting for Claude Julien to go with Chara, and he was going to put Gaudreau and the fast guys out there, and then, boom, the game is over. As soon as Chara throws a no-look pass that gets intercepted and starts going the other way.
But is it over if he doesn't pull a stunt like that and throw? I mean, that is just, you know, That's taboo. That's just a no-no for any player.
But that's
you do not make a pass like that, whether you're Johnny Gaudreau or you're Daniel Char. You don't make that pass.
Right, but that's why he shouldn't be out there, because he gets caught up in the speed of the back and forth.
But if he doesn't make that pass,
in the making plays. Murph,
do they score?
No, but I think he's forced into making those passes at such a fast pace when he's trying to keep up with it. I just don't think he's able to, and he's going to make plays like that. I think that's him trying to play that style and trying to be in that style and trying to play that that fast 3-on-3 OT, and he's just not able to do it. And like I said, that's why he shouldn't be out there for that. I think they should scale back his minutes, but right now they don't have a lot of choices as to what they can do. But this is why you continue to see problems with this team, even though they're in a playoff spot right now, because what can you do? How are they going to reduce his minutes?
Yeah.
With the defenseman that they have, they don't even have a legitimate number two. How are you going to be able to do that? They have to play him that much right now.
Well, and I think, you know, we both agreed on something there, that it's not necessarily Claude Julien's choice that he's out there. Now, people are going to say, okay, is it management? No, I mean, I think, you know, you and I touched on this off the air. Is there an issue going on right now where, let's say not just with, you know, Chara, but we are focusing on him, where the coach can't necessarily say or do what he wants to do because he's going to rub the player the wrong way? And I think that is going on with Chara right now in a very big way. But I think it's been going on for a long time, and I think it's been an issue with the Bruins that they need to somehow resolve, or it could hurt the team overall.
Well, and this is the issue with aging players that have had status with the team for a long time and have built up a power base within a team and have a lot of influence, and he's the captain, the leader, all those other things. When the status that you have with the team all of a sudden doesn't match up with the performance anymore, what do you do? That's a hard situation to be in with a professional organization when this is a guy that's always been the leader and always been the tone setter for everybody else.
Well, they're not going to pull a San Jose Sharks, I'll tell you that.
No, they're not. But, like, you know, every team, I think, runs into these situations with aging captains where it's a difficult call and where they have to start, maybe the team has to flex their muscles a little more to get what's best for the team rather than what's best for the captain.
So knowing what we know about this organization and how things run maybe behind the scenes, just what we hear,
yeah,
do you see them having a sit-down of sorts with Char at some point?
I don't think they can, because I think they need him to be their number one, even though he's not a true number one anymore.
So they're in a complete pickle.
Murph, we are going to talk to Kirk Ledecky, and we'll ask him about it, but I don't see any number one defenseman in this organization to replace him. I don't see anybody even close to being able to step in for him. So they're kind of
– they're stuck.
They have to – deal with him and manage the situation and make sure that Chara continues to bring as much as he can. And as far as Claude Julien goes, he's not going to badmouth his captain right now because he doesn't want to lose him. And that just makes sense for a coach that has got a 10-year hold on the team, given the situation he's in, and is not going to push it any more than he has
to. He's just going to pass the buck to you.
Well, why not?
Always blame in Calgary.
Always blame the media. That's rule one at the Great American Hockey Show podcast, Murph. All right, we're talking about a guy in the twilight of his career there in Zdeno Chara. Let's talk a little Chara, and also plenty of guys with bright futures with the World Juniors coming up with Kirk Ledecky. Coming up next, our interview with Kirk Ledecky from New England Hockey Show. New England Hockey Journal, longtime NHL and Bruins writer for the New England Hockey Journal, a regional scout for the Red Line Report. Kirk, thanks for coming to the show. And as we do with everybody at the start of these interviews, just tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what town you grew up in, what your upbringing was sort of like, and what got you into hockey and what got it into your blood in the first place.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks. I want to thank you and Murph for having me on the podcast. It's great. It's great to be on and talking to a couple of Boston area, Massachusetts guys. I actually grew up in New Hampshire, southern New Hampshire, across the river from Nashua. So it was good hockey country there. Lived on Robinson Pond. Learned to skate on the frozen ponds in the winter there as a kid. As a youngster, I wasn't necessarily all that, taken by soccer and baseball. I mean, my parents put me into those programs because that's pretty much, Little League was what every kid did. I didn't really have a passion for it, and my dad took me to a Boston Bruins game, and yeah, everything changed. I just became really just enthralled with hockey and the Bruins and the tradition. I remember sitting in the Garden the very first time and looking up into the rafters and seeing all of the banners, the Bruins banners and the Celtics banners, of course, but I was really captured, you know, just captivated by the Bruins banners and just seeing the game and seeing those big bad Bruins teams of the late 70s and early 80s. And that's what really did it for me. And, you know, it's been a lifelong enjoyment. And then to be able to cover the team for the last 15 years, thanks to the New England Hockey Journal, it's been a dream come true, you know, to be around the organization and get to know the players and the coaches and the management and see how things work on the inside, and then bring those insights to the readerships and the other fans that are always clamoring for information.
You're a guy with a pretty amazing memory, just in the many, many conversations that we've had over the years and recall about, you know, the different prospects and stuff. Do you have any memory or recall of that that first game and what happened in that game or something that, you know?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that it's kind of, I guess it would be ironic, I don't know. I don't want to be an Alanis Morissette and use irony and incorrectly, although she made a lot of money off of that.
That's
song.
Right. Flying the Chardonnay.
Yeah, it was St. Louis Blues, and Ed Stanielski was the starter, and the Bruins lit him up, 5 goals, and he got yanked, and Mike Liut came in, very first NHL appearance. He had been the backup that night, and he came in, and the final score was 5-5, and Liut just stood on his head. I mean, you know, and the Blues came back. And I just remember, one, being taken by that mask. I thought Liu, you know, he had one of those old Jason-style Greg Harrison specials. It was a really cool mask, and I think I had my avatar with that mask for a while. I have a replica, and so my favorite all-time player is actually not a Boston Bruin. It was Mike Liu. You know, he was my goalie idol when I was a kid. And I'll tell you, Hags, one of the real pleasures that I've had in my writing career has been getting to know Mike Liu. He's an agent for Octagon Hockey. And you think I have a recall for detail. And you guys should sit down with him sometime. He'll tell you what was on the hot dog of the dude at the Boston Garden that was sitting behind him in the last game of the season of the 1985 regular season when the Whalers played the Bruins and they had all these brawls. I mean, it's really remarkable. He's a great interview, a really good guy, and it's always nice when your idols and role models when you're a kid turn out to be great people, when you meet them, you know, under different circumstances and the cameras aren't on them and you see how genuine they are. And so, yeah, Mike Liut, that was it. And Andy Moog too. I mean, I was an Andy Moog guy. You know, Liut was a big, you know, Liut was one of those bigger, tall, athletic guys that, you know, like the Ken Dryden types, you know, people forget, if you haven't been following hockey a long time, you know, the big, gargantuan, ultra-athletic guys were not the norm. It was usually kind of the smaller, quick guys like the Mike Vernons and the Andy Moogs and even Grant Fuhrer's not all that big. That was kind of the accepted, archetype of the goaltender in the 80s and 90s. And then Patrick Waugh came along and Marty Brodeur, and you had that paradigm shift where, you know, some of those big guys that were ultra athletic usually were skaters, you know, they were forwards or defensemen. You didn't have that glory associated with being a goaltender. That was for the quirky guys that, you know, either couldn't skate all that well or just were weird. But they were quick, you know, and now you actually have kids growing up who, you know, from the very beginning, they want to be, you know, they want that pressure. They want to be the goaltender. And so it really is different. Now it's interesting to see that if you're, you know, not 6 foot or taller, you know, you're just probably not going to get drafted.
I hadn't really thought about it much, but it's almost like a reversal from those old days when we were growing up, where the forwards and the defensemen all had to be these big, huge monsters and have tons of size, and the goalies were on the smaller end. And now it's the complete opposite, where the goalies are huge, and now more and more of the NHL is getting centered around, you know, the Johnny Gaudreaus of the world and these 5'9" forwards and the, you know, Torrey Krug-type defensemen and guys that are really fast and quick. It's complete change from what it was when we were growing up.
It is. It is. And, you know, that's a reflection of how the NHL is calling. You know, I mean, you got to remember, under the old one ref system, You had one set of eyes out there, and now you have two. And so, you know, the obstruction is called a lot more, you know, closely, and guys aren't allowed to just, you know, maul, you know, just, you know, used to be, I mean, you watch the old film, you know, these big, less mobile defensemen would just reach out and grab a guy. And a lot of times that didn't, you know, that wasn't called. You can't have these less mobile, what, you know, as the fans like to say, these pylons, you know, you can't have them. Because so much to today's hockey is the speed and the transition game. So they not only have to be able to defend the front of their net in the high danger areas, but they have to be able to go back and puck retrieval. You know, not only get to the puck quickly with that F1 and F2 bearing down on them, but then move the puck to the right area so that they can then, you know, start to break out and make a crisp, smooth transition with speed. That's the name of the game. And the best teams in the NHL today, it's not an accident. They're the ones that do that very well. And so, you know, it's just interesting when you have a team that does not have what you would call team speed, like a certain NHL team we might be familiar with.
Might see a lot of that team, actually.
Yeah, it really sticks out to you, especially when you watch other teams. I was at the Flood Mar tournament a couple of years ago, prep hockey, and there was one prep team that will go nameless. I will not make them feel bad by mentioning them. However, I will tell you that a Bruins prospect was on that team, and he was part of that defense. And I remember looking over to Kyle Woodleaf, who's my boss at the Red Line as the chief scout and publisher, and we were just shaking our head. Like, we could not believe how bad that team was at getting the puck out of their own end. And he looked at me and he said, you know, you don't realize how much you take for granted that a team can move the puck out of its own zone until you see a team that absolutely cannot do it. And that was absolutely true. So I think a lot of times as fans, we kind of take that for granted that, hey, it's just easy to, you know, you should just be able to get the puck out of your zone. But as teams add those quick, fast, disruptive skill forwards that may not have great size, but they get on these guys, these defenders, so quick, you have to have the Noah Hanifins. I think, you know, Noah Hanifin is kind of your new, you know, the Rasmus Ristolainens of the world. You know, got a hat trick last night. But,
yep,
you know, those guys that can get back quickly and process the game so fast and then have the puck skills and the confidence to move it. If you don't have several of those, you know, Justin Falks, you know, I mean, you can go on and on. You're going to be in trouble.
Kirk, you know, on this note of speed and the game changing, and, you know, as Hag said there, it used to be the guys in front of the goalie that had the size and could utilize that. And you mentioned mauling guys. You can't do that anymore. There's a defenseman here for the Boston Bruins who's surely going to go to the Hall of Fame. I have no doubt in my mind. But Zdeno Chara right now seems to be at a crossroads. Maybe it started a couple of years ago, but really at a crossroads right now in his career, where he's got a ton left on his contract. I'm not sure the Bruins can ever move that. So they seem stuck with each other right now. And Chara, in my opinion right now, seems to be trying to really adapt to that speed of the game. How does he do that? How's a guy like that, who's sort of maybe a throwback to what we were referring to, really adapt right now and survive in an ever-changing game?
I think you said it. Yeah, he's going to have to adapt. So the old way of the way he used to do things when he was younger, a little quicker. I don't know what, you know, he suffered that strange knee injury, and he's insisted that that it doesn't affect him. But you wonder, right? And I mean, it's,
yeah.
Boy, I guess we've never been told in our lives by a player or a coach or a GM something that is not the case, right?
Right.
On the record, guys, we've never seen that.
No.
So I don't, you know, I, Father Time is clearly catching up to him. You know, he always had before. He had that tremendous size, reach. He wasn't the most graceful, agile of skaters, but he covered so much ground, and he, you know, his defense radius, you know, just in terms of how far he could get his stick out, and how he could, you know, angle players away. He had enough quickness, you know, to do that. Now I think that's kind of getting away. So, you know, I don't know if it's a matter of him just trying to do the things he's always done, and now we're seeing that it's not working out for him as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a matter of the team really needs to reduce the ice time.
That's what I
mean. Well, I think he's playing 25 minutes a night. He played close to it. He played close to 23 last year. They don't have any choice but to play him a much heavier ice time workload this year just because of the defensemen that they have. But it's clearly having an effect on him now where you're getting diminishing returns, I think, from him. And the wear and tear of playing those minutes is slowing him down. He's looked much slower in some of the games, I'd say, over the last couple of weeks than he looked earlier in the season. And, you know, he can adapt his game to a certain degree, I'm sure, and he has over the years.
Well, he's got the hockey sense.
Coming out of that lockout where they missed the whole season, he definitely adapted his game, and he had to because a lot of those other huge defensemen were just wiped clean out of the game coming out of the lockout where they missed the whole season. But when you see him adapt and he's doing certain things, like in the Calgary game, he's trying to throw no-look passes and do certain things and get fancy where he can't do that. That's not
adapting.
His game.
But that's not adapting in my eyes, Hags. I think you see, and I understand totally that it's a different position and it's a lot easier to sort of adapt when you're a forward than when you're a defenseman. But look at the way Jaromir Jagr, besides his insane workout schedule and what we saw a couple years back when he's on the ice 3 hours after a game with weights on him doing sprints. Besides that, you know, I think it's Jagr thinks the game so well. And Chara has that. And so I guess my question now is there a bit of stubbornness going on with Chara where he doesn't want to maybe use his hockey sense and thinks that he can just survive on the way he did things before? Is there too much stubbornness going on? And you know, Kirk brought up the injury thing there too. I agree with Kirk. I think that injury still is nagging. He needs to maybe accept his fate, accept the way things are going. I don't see him doing that right now. I see him being very stubborn.
I think it's accepting that
adapting.
He's not the same guy he was 5
years
ago. I think that's it in a nutshell.
And that's his problem right now. I don't think he I think he can do it. I think Jagr's a perfect example of, you know, if you accept that you're not what you were before.
Well, Recchi was like that too.
Recchi too.
At the end of his career.
We've seen, and I know they were forwards. I get that. But I still think there needs to be a little openness in terms of how he approaches the game right now.
So when I was a younger kid, guys, I'm going to bring some pop culture in this. I was a younger kid. I was a big Dirty Harry Callahan fan. Right?
There you go.
So
nice.
One of my favorite movies was Magnum Force. And for those who haven't seen Magnum Force, that's the one about the vigilante cops. And it's David Soul, you know, you know, from Starsky and Hutch. Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was the big frat brother in Animal House. Tim.
Oh.
Tim Matheson.
Anyway,
Tim Matheson.
Matheson, yes. Matheson. They imagine. Yeah, David Soul and Tim Matheson as the bad guys, but they were vigilante cops. And you know, Dirty Harry always had this tagline in every movie, you know. And, you know, it's go ahead and make my day and one. Well, in that one, it was a man's got to know his limitations, you know. And so when I look at, you know, when I hear this discussion, you know, and I think there's some validity to that, you know, Zdeno Chara, as I was, it was pointed out to me by the Slovaks I was in Afghanistan with.
Yeah.
And I talked to Z about that, and I said, is it Chara or Chara? He said, hey, I'll be honest with you, I just gave up trying to correct people, so I've always just gone with Chara.
But it's not Chara like Dupe says?
No, it's not Chara, no. Okay. But in any case, I think it's a matter of the whole limitations. He either may not realize it or he does realize it. He just wants to win and compete so hard. I think that's a lot of it. Is that, you know,
pride.
He's been a leader for so long, and he's been a guy that's just been able to go out and do things that most defensemen can only dream of, because they're not 6'9" and they don't have this condor like wingspan and this, you know, stick that's, you know, stretches from end to end, you know. It's tough because you don't have that legitimate number two defenseman on the team right now that can kind of offset that. And I think that's really why you're going to see you're seeing the struggles. And we knew coming in that this defense as constructed was going to have, you know, some peaks and valleys and, you know, probably obviously more peaks, or correction, valleys than peaks, because they just don't have the experience and the ability. And Tuukka Rask is a trophy goalie, but most goaltenders just cannot carry a team if the defense is not of a certain caliber. And I think the Bruins are certainly lacking some overall ability on that group.
That goes directly to the giant, largely casual fan base of the trade Tuukka and Tuukka stinks crowd of the first few months that didn't quite realize the grade A chances that were coming.
Oops.
Chance after chance after chance right in front of Tuukka Rask, and odd man rush and guys totally unmolested in front of the net with a clear shot at the net, and Tuukka throughout the first couple months of the season, and how much of that was not Tuukka's fault and was more just a defense that was sucking dirty pond water, to put it kindly, in front of him. But we want to move on to other topics, Kurt. And one of the reasons we definitely have you on, in addition to the Bruins stories and the knowledge that you bring there, is just the prospect knowledge. And with the World Junior Classic coming up, tournament coming up, just some of the Bruins prospects that are going to be in that, the fact that some of the Bruins prospects didn't make some of the teams. I'm thinking of Sinishin and DeBrusk in particular. Just where the Bruins prospects are at going into the World Junior Tournament.
Right. Well, DeBrusk was the one eyebrow raiser for me, just because he's a late 96, so this was it. He had attended the camp. The thing with DeBrusk, I really like him, but he doesn't have a real wow factor in his game. I've seen him a lot, mostly on film, but I do catch the Swift Current games. And he doesn't wow you. He's not this flashy, exciting player who's going to jump out at you. He kind of just skates up and down the ice and makes good plays. But when he gets the puck on his stick down around the goal, that's when he makes things happen. And, after the game, you look at it, you're like, oh wow, he had a couple of assists, and he had a good goal where he just got his stick on a deflected shot or stuff like that. But if you're going in going, he was the 14th overall pick, so I expect to be impressed by this guy. That's not him. Now, he also went down to block shot.
Yeah.
Joe Hickett's shot, and man, he caught it.
Yes.
And he was out for it, and I think that hurt him as well. That hurt him as well. But
yeah, it was a pretty scary injury from what I was told.
It needed surgery to make
sure everything was going to be okay.
Yeah, I was mildly surprised he didn't get the call, but that's it for him.
Yeah.
He's a late 96, so it was make this squad or not. Doesn't look like he's going to get an opportunity. Sinishin's a little different animal. I firmly believe he'll be there next year. Late bloomer, a guy who didn't have a lot of help. He was on a deep team last year, and so they sold out to try to win the Memorial Cup, and so he was kind of buried, and yet he still scored 26 goals. This year we're seeing, hey, it was no fluke. The guy's got some ability. He is an exciting player. He's a guy that has a powerful stride, and when you look at the goals he scored, a year ago I saw him beating defensemen wide, going to the net, scoring, and I said, oh, they'll tighten that up. They're not going to let him do that this year. He's getting those goals because he's a fourth liner, and he's got some favorable matchups. Now this year he's a first liner and he's still doing it. I'm sure you've seen the highlight reel goals he's scored, man. I mean, that's impressive. And so I think Bruins fans have a lot to be excited about. I'm writing my annual New England Hockey Journal Bruins prospects review, and I'm in the process of putting the finishing touches on that right now. And he's very high up there. He's very high up there. So I'm not concerned that he's not at the WJC. And don't forget, Jeremy Lauzon got pulled in as an injury replacement for Jake Walman. So he actually is being rewarded for the great season he's having. And I'll be honest with you, I think Lauzon, between Zboril and Carlo, I think he's the best defenseman of the three, just because he is more of a complete player. Zboril's got better skill than Lauzon on the offensive side, and Carlo's bigger and more of a shutdown D. But he takes all three. He doesn't have any discernible weaknesses. He's a legitimate player and an exciting prospect.
Kirk, you bring up a thing there with DeBrusk not making it there, and you described his play as maybe not too flashy, keeps it simple. I lived up in Canada the last 2 years and got to know a lot of scouts up there and stuff in the queue. And it seems to me, out of all the international programs, that that has to be the most political program going on up there. And how much of that do you think plays a role in the kids making it, where sometimes these kids get sort of typecasted or, you know, stereotyped into a certain group of player, a certain style of player, and no matter what they do, they've still got no chance of making that team?
I think there is a political element to a lot of these programs. And
that's not to say it doesn't go on here either.
In the States. I can't speak to Canada's process. Like I said, he was at the evaluation camp over the summer. Mm-hmm. He wasn't great. I mean, I talked to guys that were there, NHL scout, and our Western Canada guy for Redline was there. And I asked him about him. He's like, he didn't really help himself. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but there were other guys who were better. And so, you know, I think sometimes people have a tendency to put a little too much stock in World Junior. I mean, it's great. But only a certain number of people can go. There are some that shine and go on to have great NHL careers, and there are guys that go on, that shine at the World Junior Tournament and never go on to do anything. So I think it's because of the way the game is marketed and sold. WJC has become this be-all, end-all for prospects, and it's almost become a stain. Like, if you're not there, you messed up. There's something wrong with you. And I don't think you can look at what DeBrusk has done this year and say he blew an opportunity.
Right.
He was an unfortunate victim of an injury that made, you know, it's very possible that they said, we don't know if he's going to be, you know, if he's going to be, you know, fully himself. So given that, there are other guys we just have ranked at. I don't know what the process was, but, you know, it's disappointing for him, but this is an opportunity for him to maybe get some motivation, go out and put up a lot of points for Swift Current and demonstrate his value in rinks away from, you know, Helsinki, where the tournament's going to be played this year.
I believe Forsbacka Backa Carlson is going to be playing for Sweden too for the World Junior, and obviously you mentioned Lausanne and Brennan Carlo as well. Maybe just
sort of
the word that you've got on those guys, and sort of what to look for if you know, Bruins fans are watching the World Juniors.
JFK is the guy who's really rising. Just because
Can watch him at BU if they want to once he gets back from the tournament too.
Exactly. So I've had three different NHL scouts who work for teams other than the Bruins but are based in New England come up to me, or not based in New England but they're crossover. So they're either based and they live in the New England area and they scout heavily the junior and the college ranks, or they travel in as crossover. And I've had three guys come to me and go, JFK was the best player hands down on the ice last night. And that kind of caught me by surprise, because I went up to Omaha last year to watch in the USHL, and I liked him, but I mean, he was not, you know, he's not one of these guys that necessarily wows you either. He kind of plays at a deliberate pace. He's very Bergeron-esque, just in terms of, you know, his tools don't jump out at you until he makes a great play, and then you're like, whoa, that was impressive. You know, he can really see the ice and think the game. But apparently he's taken it to a kind of whole nother level this year at BU as a freshman. He's just made the adjustment right away in the transition. Really smart guy, great at the faceoff dot, you know, right-handed center, which obviously Berge is too. At the draft, you remember when we interviewed him after Hags, he said, you know, what was the first thing he said? Hey, I'm a Patrice Bergeron guy, you know.
Yep.
He's the guy I look to for inspiration. He's the player I want to be. So, he's exciting, you know, just because, you know, he may not be this flashy, explosive, dynamic presence, but he's probably, you know, he's probably going to play and play very well. I could see him, you know, when he makes runs, he'll make it right away as a, you know, establish himself as a third liner. And then he's the kind of guy that, you know, as Bergeron did, he works his way up into, you know, potentially the top two lines. And he's a guy that can bring you a lot of versatility for years to come. So he's a really exciting, you know, when you look at where they got him, you say, you know, a lot, and they're all saying, man, you know, if we could have a do-over, you know, we would have taken Forsbacka Carlson in the first round.
And the Bruins also did get Patrice Bergeron in the second round, if memory does serve me correctly. So they've had some
45th overall.
There you go.
They were both 45th overall picks, as was Ryan Spooner. So there are, you know, you have two guys on the Bruins roster who were 45th overall selections. you know, in their respective draft years, and then Forsbach or Carlson as well. And he's just, you know, he's been very good. And I like Brandon Carlo a lot, but he's not sexy. He's you know, he's big. He's rugged. He's a great shutdown guy. I don't see this. You know, I don't like to use the word upside because I think it's overused. It's kind of a hackneyed term, and what the heck does it mean? But when you look at Carlo, I think he is what he is. He's a guy that will come in and play with his mobility and his size because you can't teach his size. But I don't think fans should be, you know, expecting him to develop into this, you know, number one two-way threat. He's more of a 3-4. He's a guy you put with your top guy, and then you've got a heck of a pairing. And he's solid. He played for USA last year. He will, you know, pump in the odd goal and get the pull. But when I look at Carlo in the offensive end, I don't see a guy that has a lot of vision and creativity. So he's just kind of putting his head down and blasting the puck. I think he's limited in that regard, but I don't want to make it sound like I'm down on him. I think he's a very good prospect. He's just, he kind of is what he is, and he's not going to be, I don't see him developing into anything special. Lauzon, on the other hand, I think has that it factor that he could be special. He could develop into, you know, potentially a number two defenseman one day in the NHL.
When you talk about Carlo and Lauzon and do the Bruins, do you feel like they legitimately have a potential number one guy in their system among their draft picks, among their prospects, a sort of heir apparent to Chara? Or do you feel like I do, that is the sort of one gaping hole or the one thing staring at them in the face that they absolutely have to fill in the next couple of years if they want to continue to contend?
Yeah, no, they don't have – like right as things stand right now, they don't have that. I like Zboril's talent. I'm not as big a fan of his work ethic and his, you know, his compete. But even he, as talented as he is, I don't know that he would be that true blue, you know, cornerstone guy. He could, you know, could he play on a top pairing and provide offense one day? Sure. But just because someone plays on the top pairing doesn't make him a legitimate number, what we call a legitimate number one or number two. Now, that's a subjective assessment. What is that? You know, I would submit to you a number one defenseman is someone who plays upwards of 25 minutes or more, provides offense. You know, their point per 60 ratio is, you know, in the upper, you know, 10% of, you know, of all NHL defensemen. They hit, they block shots. If they don't hit and block shots, they do one very well. You know, things like that. Those are the, you know, the Corsi, you know, numbers, you know, all these advanced stats that I'm getting more familiar and more comfortable with applying, you know, the analytics when I do my analysis as opposed to just the eye test. Those all have to factor in. So I think, you know, yeah, just because someone plays on a top pairing, you know, for a stretch of 20 games doesn't make them a top defenseman. They're on the top pairing because, well, the team doesn't have a better option. So right now, Hag's looking at who they have. I would love to see someone develop within the system. I think, you know, the Bruins, it isn't an accident. We heard that they tried to move up in the draft.
Yep.
You don't do that if you think Jakob Zboril is going to be your cornerstone defenseman. You sit there and you go, hey, we're going to take our guy and we'll get him. We'll probably get him at 13 because no one else sees him. No, they were, you know, moving a rumor to move to try to get Noah Hanifin because he's that guy, right? And if they had gotten Noah Hanifin, he would have been that guy. And I don't think he would be in Boston this year. You know, he's in Carolina because they had an opportunity for him. I bet if the Bruins had drafted Hanifin, they would have left him in Boston College and let him develop at least another year. You know.
Yeah, that makes
but
sense.
We'll never know that, right?
Yeah.
We'll never know that.
Keep him in the backyard, and you can keep a close eye on him. I'll wrap up with this last question, Kirk. We're doing the 20 under 25 here at Comcast Sportsnet New England, which is all the different sports, the best players under the age of 25. Who do you think is the Bruins player, whether at the NHL or a draft pick or a minor league level, that has the highest ceiling under the age of 25?
That's got to be David Pastrnak.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
No question. I think the only guy under 25 that's a potential franchise cornerstone that they have right now would be that guy.
Yeah, I know it's unfortunate, the injury. You know, and I, you know, it's I mean, he went out and someone pulled me aside and said, yeah, it's, you know, he's got a broken foot, you know, and you know, it's a fracture. And they didn't use the term bone bruise, but that was that, you know, the bone bruise sounds so innocuous. And I went back to that source. I said, hey, everyone's, you know, beating me up about a bone bruise. He said, hey, go Google, look up what the definition of a bone bruise, dude. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it's a fracture of the inner bone, you know, and all of that. And, you know, words have meaning, right? So it was a fracture after all.
And, hey, you know what? You don't think with Pasternak there's any chance where he's coming back from injury and he's under 20 that they would send him to World Juniors as kind of a glorified rehab, do you?
No.
Okay.
They won't. I don't think they would risk that. No, he's far too valuable to the Boston Bruins. So if he's gonna re-aggravate that injury, they would rather see that happen in the service of the Boston Bruins than for Team Czech Republic.
Makes sense. He's a dynamite piece of property under the age of 25. Kirk, thank you very much.
Just before you go, yes. I could see them sending him to Providence for a rehab.
Well, yeah, he's been out since Halloween, so he definitely needs some time to get up to speed for sure.
I cannot envision a scenario where they would risk that asset. I mean, look, I'm sure Czech Republic would love
I was going to say, I think the Czech Republic's going to be very disappointed about that.
Yeah, but they know the deal, and you know what, they had him before, and they know the deal. This is the way things work, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate, but I would caution any fans that are looking at Pasternak and looking at the 2 goals and 4 points in 10 games, or was it 12 games, whatever, you know, he didn't play very much before he went out. He's still very young. We're talking about a 19-year-old. When it comes to his skill level and his attitude, his work ethic, his character, he's going to be a heck of a player. The Bruins just need to protect that asset. Don't rush him back. Make sure he's healed. Make sure he's ready to go. And I think things will be fine. He's not going to probably have as productive a season as we wanted. But when the Bruins need him, it would be much better to have him, you know, raring to go than to keep having a series of setbacks and nagging injuries that keep them at less than effectiveness, which, you know, he clearly was when he took that shot off the foot. And, you know, we saw him for a game or two, and he just was not anywhere near where he needed to be.
Yep, no reason to treat him like anything but a precious piece of hockey property right now, because that's exactly what he is to the Boston Bruins. And, you know, he told us this summer, and he knew full well going in that this was going to be a very difficult year for him, his second NHL year and a full year, and, you know, that kind of sophomore season challenge that a lot of these players face after they kind of burst on the scene as a 18, 19-year-old. So he was fully well aware of it, and now he's kind of in the middle of it right now, but he's also talented enough to really give them a burst when he comes back. But, Kirk, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate the knowledge, as always, and I'm sure we will have you on the Great American Hockey Show podcast again, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. You guys take care, and thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Kirk.
Hi, Murph. Lots of good stuff from Kirk there. As always, he's a wealth of information about the prospects and the young players coming up for the Bruins. And, you know, despite the fact that both Sinishin and DeBrusque aren't on Team Canada for World Juniors, there's a lot of players the Bruins fans can watch in that tournament.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I think, first of all, I want to say Kirk is just like the Rain Man of prospects.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's great talking to him, because
we got to get him sometime to talk like his stories about the Bruins players on the roster now and sort of the offbeat stories that he has on those guys.
Yeah.
Because he's got tons of stories on all those
guys.
Yeah, I
mean, he could easily be an NHL scout if he wanted to, for sure. He's got the pedigree there. But, yeah, I mean, I was impressed with his take on some of those guys, namely Carlo, who I think can be a great guy. And I thought, I really liked how he said, I don't want people to put their expectations too high for him, because we see that happen all the time, right? I mean, high pick, and he comes in, and you think he's going to be flashy, you think he's going to produce a lot of points. That doesn't necessarily always mean that, and you got to accept a player for what he is. And if the Bruins and the fan base and the media are able to do that, from what I'm, by all accounts, not just from what I heard from Kirk, from a lot of people that have seen Carlo play, I think they're really going to like this guy.
Yeah, you're 6'4", 6'5", and you can skate as a defenseman, and you've got a little bit of a mean streak. I think that's all you're looking for.
He fits right in.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Bruins are looking for. As far as that goes, Zboril's a guy I might worry a little bit more about the hype and the expectation, because he was such a high first-round pick for them. And I think there's going to be even more on his shoulders, especially where you hear things about the work ethic and how much he's put in, and you know the Bruins kind of needing to light a fire under him a little bit. So we'll see what happens with him. But a guy that's had a fire lit under him for quite some time, Brad Marchand, and a few other things lit under him, I think, over the years. I caught up with him for three periods.
First of all, any particular song that you listen to before a game, like traditionally, that gets you worked up, like a big game or something that gets you jacked up to play, that has over the years?
There's a few songs lately that I've been going to. Drake and Meek Mill have a song, Rico, that that I've been listening to a lot. And then a couple songs just came out from Southpaw soundtrack, Beast and Phenomenal, that I find they get me going, so I like those.
So you and Bergie both like the Eminem songs then, huh?
Yeah, with Tori's pushing on all the guys, so I think we're getting sick of it, we're just buying in.
Favorite sports movie of all time?
Sandlot's up there. That's a phenomenal
film. Killing Me Smalls, though.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal movie. And you can never go wrong with Slapshot or Youngblood.
What character in Slapshot have you always kind of envisioned yourself as?
I can't remember his name, but
which guy?
It's one of the Party Boys.
There you go. That's all that needs to be said. I do remember you pulling a Hanson's move. Was this preseason against the Panthers? Like, I think it was your rookie year.
Yeah.
When you did the swipe, the hook of the goalie's legs, and then took him down, Hanson style. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, well, I got a couple plays out of their book, but those guys are on another level.
Shows, television shows that you have on your DVR, that you have the series recording set to, that you watch?
There's been a lot of different series. There's obviously Sons of Anarchy is a huge one that I got into. And then I watched a little bit of Breaking Bad. Right now Vikings is up there. Game of Thrones. Got into one, it's called The Following, that was really good, and then How to Get Away with Murder, Scandal, like they just go on and on.
I'm sensing a pattern there, a lot of body counts in these shows.
Yeah. trying to figure ways to, you know, do some things.
Thanks, bud.
All right, Murph, that's another show in the books. Great American Hockey Show. It was good seeing you as always. Why don't we get together for one more before the Winter Classic, and maybe we'll get some alumni from either side of the.
That sounds like a plan.
Either side of the aisle,
Are we going to go within the 12 days of Christmas here, or post Christmas? What do we think?
I think post Christmas. We'll see what happens, though.
All right.
But until next time, that's it for this time.
I'll give you your present then, buddy.
I've already got it wrapped under the tree, Mark. For now, keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey. If you want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.